You have found the InnoTalks podcast, and I'm your host, Roman Jurovetsky, assistant professor at Aalborg University in Denmark. In this podcast, I'm bringing you conversations with scholars working with innovation in different contexts and letting them share their ideas about economics, policy, and society. Innovation studies as a field formed in the end of the 20th century, introducing some fresh ideas that often would go against the mainstream view. And you can hear more about that in episode number 2, where I interview Bendoke Lundfall. Over the years, many of the ideas themselves became mainstream, but I think that it is important to remember that some of the core long-term oriented principles, such as openness or capacity building, have to be defended so they do not become victims of short-term profit-seeking. And therefore, I think a format like this podcast is great to create a space where researchers can actually elaborate on their ideas in a long format. But enough about the podcast and its format. Let's talk about today's episode. So today I connect with Roberto Ragolotti, who is a professor in economics at the University of Pavia in Italy, and also an adjunct professor here at Aalborg University. Roberta has contributed to a variety of literatures over the years, and more recently she's been working on the dynamics between innovation systems and global value chains. She also looked into technological catching up in emerging economies, and the research closest to this interview, the role of foreign direct investments of companies from emerging countries to access knowledge in developed countries. In the interview, we discuss one of her recent publications that analyzes, and now I quote, "Chinese and Indian multinational enterprises shopping spree in advanced countries," and whether it is good for these companies and how it influences their innovative output. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and you will never miss a new episode. Or also write a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And now let's jump straight into the interview with Roberta. Okay, with me on the line today, Roberta Ragolotti. She is a professor of economics at the University of Pavia in Italy and also an adjunct professor here at Aalborg University in Denmark. Hi, Roberta.
Hi, Roman.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for getting me involved in this podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining this. I mean, it's I know you're a rather busy person, but you agreed to joining this podcast, and it's really, really nice also to talk about your recent publications. And maybe could we maybe start by you just introducing yourself and telling a little bit about your career, how you got into the kind of research that you're doing now?
Yes. So I am an economist, and I've got a master's degree in development economics from the University of Oxford, and a PhD in development studies from the Institute of Development Studies in University of Sussex in Brighton. Basically, my main field of research is industrialization and innovation in developing and emerging countries. And this is what I've been researching for quite a while. I've been changing a little bit the focus of my research interest. I started with my PhD thesis some years ago, or maybe many years ago, doing research on clusters. It was at the very beginning of interest on clusters in developing countries. And I did an empirical work comparing industrial districts in Italy with some clusters in Mexico. So for quite a while, I did research on clusters in developing countries. And then I move on to global value chains. Maintaining my interest investing in clusters, I started to understand the connection between clusters and global value chains. So how firms, and in particular small firms located in clusters, could take advantage of being involved in global value chains. And I did this with a focus on Latin America. And now more recently, I would say that I have three main, currently I have three main research lines. First of all, again related with global value chains, I've been working and thinking about innovation in global value chains. I have recently published a chapter in the handbook of global value chain edited by Gary Gereffi and by Stefano Ponte, in which together with Carlo Pietrobelli and Rasmus Lima, we have been working on the relationship between innovation systems and the global value chain, and how these how innovation system and global value chains support the developing of innovation capabilities of firms. Then I've been doing some work on catch up in emerging countries, in particular on technological catch up, and I have done some work on the wine industry globally, and more recently now I am editing a special issue on in industrial corporate change about catch up in renewable energies with a specific focus on China, in which, by the way, you also have a contribution, an article is going to be published, an article of yours is going to be published in this special issue. And finally, there is this line of research which is more relevant for what we are going to talk today, which is the role of foreign direct investment from emerging countries multinational as a way for this multinational and from this country to access knowledge. In particular, I've been working on multinational from China and India and trying to understand if these investment directed to advanced countries are a good channel and an efficient way to get access to knowledge, and they are supporting the building up of innovative capabilities in China and other emerging countries.
That's quite a lot, I would say. That's many different research streams, but then in the end, it's all in a way related to capability building, related to knowledge accumulation, and you know how that in the end drives innovation. And you already provided a very nice segue to what we are going to talk about today, and this is your recent publication. Could you just briefly outline, you know, what is the main idea there?
Okay. This is a publication together with Vito Mendolagine, Elisa Giuliani, and Arianna Martinelli. And what we do is to investigate acquisitions made by Chinese and Indian multinationals in the US and in Europe. And we try to assess and to empirically test if through these acquisitions, these companies, these multinationals, have improved their innovative capacity, their innovative capability. So we try to see, first of all, if there is an improvement of innovative capabilities, and also which are the conditions influencing the impact. So if what are the determinants of this impact?
Just out of curiosity, 3 days ago, and we just talked about this briefly offline before our chat. So 3 days ago, now we're in this COVID-19 crisis situation, and the economy is not doing too well. And Margrethe Vestager, who is the European Competition Commissioner, came out with a statement where she says European countries need to protect their companies from Chinese takeover in this situation right now. by buying up stocks or helping otherwise. So what is your immediate view to such a statement?
Okay, yeah, I mean, this is not so new in the sense that this attitude of protectionism, in particular against Chinese multinationals, have been around for at least for the last few years. This is true in the EU and it's definitely true in the US. Well, I think our study shows that acquisition per se are not enough to acquire knowledge, because we are showing that in order to acquire knowledge, the Chinese and Indian multinationals in this case, they do need some capacity. They do need what we call absorptive capacity, and they do need also to be accepted in the contest in which they are going to insert through their acquisition. Because I think that yes, protectionism could be a way, but then there are a lot of informal barriers, like in trade. No, so I mean, as we probably are going to see along this podcast, there are many situations in which Chinese companies have entered or have acquired a company, but have not been really able to access the knowledge because, for instance, the best people, the best engineers just left because they didn't want to work for Chinese people. So I think it's a very complex phenomenon. At the same time, there are also very good example of very successful acquisition. I think if you take the case of the acquisition done by Geely, the Volvo acquisition done by Geely, I think this was a very successful both for Geely and for Volvo and for the people, the Swedish people and the Swedish employees of Volvo. The main research and development center is still in Gothenburg, and I think really we need to know more about these acquisitions in order to be able to understand what could be a good acquisition, which is good for the acquiring and for the acquirer, and a bad acquisition, which can be very bad for either the acquirer or the acquiring. So I think our study is useful in terms of trying to understand more from the micro point of view the mechanism of this acquisition. And I think in general, more empirical micro research would be very useful in terms of also guiding policies such as or intervention such as the one which was indicated recently by the EU in terms of more protectionism against Chinese investment.
I mean, this is not a completely new phenomenon, I would guess. I mean, this kind of acquisitions for knowledge happened before. Probably it is a newer phenomenon now with emerging economies. I mean, you refer in the paper to, I think, an article from 2008 in The Economist, if I'm not mistaken. So could you talk a little bit about the history of, you know, these mergers and or these acquisitions coming out of emerging countries? So when did it start, and maybe also did it evolve over time? So now that you say, for example, there is such acquisition as the one by Geely that actually worked out, and I bet there's also, I guess there is many acquisitions that maybe didn't work out, potentially in the very beginning of this phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I think you are very true. Acquisition as a way to access knowledge. So what is called in the IB, in the international business literature, as strategic resource seeking acquisition are not new at all. I would say that most of the literature about acquisition as a channel to acquire knowledge is exploring acquisition in advanced countries. So you are true that there is already a literature on also on emerging countries, but most of the literature is really on advanced countries. And this literature is not really reaching a very clear result, in the sense that there are contribution pointing out to the opportunities and the benefit that acquisition can offer for the acquiring companies, because there are opportunities to take advantage of economies of scale, of economies of scope. But there are also contribution pointing out to the difficulties of making an acquisition. I mean, we have found that in the case of emerging market multinational, acquisition can be very difficult, but the more general literature about acquisition undertaken by advanced country multinational is also pointing out to these difficulties. And this is because there could be cultural clashes, there could be resistance by the acquired company in terms of making the knowledge available. So there are many reasons why an acquisition can fail. And this is even more so when there are big distance, when there is a large distance between the acquiring company and the acquired company in terms of, for instance, culture and knowledge base. In the case of emerging market multinational, I mean, you said that this is not a new phenomenon. This is true. But I would say that if investment from emerging market multinational have been increasing quite intensively since the beginning of the 2000s, acquisition are a more recent phenomenon, because at the beginning, most of investment were greenfield, so establishment of new plants, of new research and development centers.
Now you're saying, when you say greenfield establishment, so this is emerging countries, multinational companies establishing research centers or facilities in developed countries.
Yes, I mean, it could be in developed countries. I mean, we are focusing in this now. We are focusing on investment going towards developed countries, but of course, there are investment also from emerging countries going to developing countries. But yes, this is new production facilities or new R&D centers, and these are greenfield. And this has been the large majority of the investment for a long period of time. More recently, I would say in the last 5-6 years, acquisition have been very much on the rise, and in particular, they've been on the rise because and this is very much a Chinese phenomenon. There were some very large acquisitions, so acquisition of very large company. For instance, just to make an example, ChemChina, which acquired Pirelli, the Italian tire producer, and then ChemChina, after 1 year, acquired also Syngenta, a chemical company. company in Switzerland. So this has been really very, very large acquisition of very large company. And so a lot of attention has been directed to this acquisition. And this is probably also, I mean, also the size of the dimension of this acquisition has been one of the reasons to increase the attention of the EU institution, of the national government, which have been starting to be a bit afraid of Chinese company buying too much, acquiring too many company, acquiring too very, very large company. This is a little bit the, so because this phenomenon is kind of more recent, also the literature about acquisition made by emerging market multinational into advanced country is more recent. I mean, generally speaking, pointing out to the possible difficulties that these emerging market multinational could find in acquiring companies in countries where they are where they can suffer of two we could say that they can suffer of two problems. One is the liability of foreigners, and this is something which is not specific of emerging market multinational. I mean, every multinational is a foreigner in a country which is not its origin country. But on top of that, emerging market multinational can suffer of what is called the liability of emerginess. And this is really what we are also trying to test in our article. Basically, the idea is that these multinational tend to be considered somehow a low reputation in advanced countries. So Chinese companies tend to be considered as not so much innovative, as to be very much aggressive. So all these characteristics are contributing in making this acquisition very, very difficult for companies.
At this point, I would really like to know, maybe you said before, you talked about a good example, you know, how it can work out with, for example, Sweden still, you know, the research centers are still where they used to be. So, you know, many things are not disrupted. They could access knowledge, but, you know, things are working out quite well for both sides. But maybe do you have an example where it just like it didn't work out well? Where it worked out kind of quite poorly, before we go into the different principles that you just outlined.
Well, yes, I think there are many cases also, because there is always a lot of attention on well-known companies. So there are many cases of very small companies which have been acquired and then it was a failure. They were just sold out after a while and the acquisition didn't go well. But what we can also see is that there is a need of a learning time. For instance, I can make an example of an Italian company, Benelli. Benelli is a motorcycle producer. It was acquired by a Chinese company some years ago, and at the beginning it was a very difficult acquisition because at the beginning they tried to do the research and development in Italy, then they move the research and development to China, and so there was not a clear strategy. And on top of that, there was a problem clash of culture. So many Chinese engineers were sent to Italy, and it was very difficult for the Italian management to interact with the Chinese. And then after a while, they found a way to understand each other. So the Italian management was given more space, so they've been able to organize better the responsibilities of the Italian headquarters with respect to the Chinese headquarters, and they started to learn from each other, and everything started to work quite well. And it's quite interesting. I mean, I have another anecdotal example from about this company, because a few years ago, in the master degree in which I'm teaching, there was a Chinese student, and he did his master thesis with me. And this guy was really a very bright guy, but above all, it was very, first of all, speaking Italian very, very well, and very much integrated with all the Italian fellows, and so very, very much able to pick up the Italian culture. And as soon as he got the degree, he got he was hired exactly by Benelli to make this kind of cultural bridge between Italian and Chinese. So I think these kind of people are really key in terms of making in terms of facilitating an acquisition.
Yeah. No, and I just know myself too well how difficult that can be, working with a culture that is so far away, especially as China. So, you know, with the Sino-Danish Center, which you also have visited several times, I mean, we have exactly all the same kind of challenges, obviously not on the same level financially as large companies, but you know, it's a different culture, and it's hard to sometimes to interact, even if maybe you both want to go the same direction. So yeah, that's true. But just before that, you talked about liability of foreignness and liability of emergence. So I mean, how are those two different, and how does it translate, and what you're doing in your paper?
Well, yes, as I was saying, the liability of foreigners is something which is not specific of emerging market multinational. This is something that, this is a concept which was introduced long time ago in the international business literature. And basically is the idea that multinational, when it goes into a new country, is always suffering from a distance, which can be a geographical distance, a cultural distance, an institutional distance. Of course, if an Italian company goes to Austria or goes to Germany, the liability of foreigners is probably less than if the same Italian company is going to China, because the geographical distance is less, and the cultural distance and the institutional distance is of course, less. But this is something which is something which is not specific of emerging market multinational. What is specific is this liability of emergence, which is due to the fact that these emerging market multinational are suffering from the fact that first of all they can be unknown. So for instance, we have interviewed some Italian managers working for a Chinese company, and what they told us was, well, now things are working very well, and we are very happy to work with our new Chinese owner, but at the very beginning we were very, very afraid about this acquisition, because we didn't know anything about this Chinese company, we never heard about this company, and we were really, there was a kind of resistance, a kind of there was a kind of idea that because this owner was Chinese, they could be not very innovative, or they could be just interested in taking advantage of our knowledge. What they want to do was to just take the knowledge and bring it back to China. So it's really an issue of little knowledge about this company sometimes. And then, of course, all these, the way in which Chinese companies or other emerging market multinationals are portrayed by politicians, are portrayed in the press, is not really helping them in getting accepted. Because very often they are portrayed companies that they just want to take the knowledge and close down the company. They don't want to, or they want to impose sometimes their way of dealing with labor, which is different from the way in which we are used in Europe to deal with labor, and so on and so forth. So this is liability of emergence. The idea that these companies are somehow, less innovative, bad, and so it's better to stay far from them. So this is basically the idea.
Yeah, now you outlined many of these mechanisms that may potentially be at play on the micro level. So how do they work out in your paper in the end? What you do in the end is a macro study, which is looking at many companies and many cases. So how do you translate it?
Okay. Yeah. In our study, we take into account two different characteristics of the emerging market multinationals, which we believe can make a difference in terms of their capacity to make successful acquisition in terms of accessing and getting knowledge, and so becoming more innovative. The first one is their initial absorptive capacity, and we measure with the idea that firms with a better absorptive capacity will be better able to absorb the knowledge that they can get with the acquisition, will be more capable to adapt the knowledge they get to the knowledge that they already have. So the absorptive capacity is measured taking into account the existing patent of the acquiring companies, so the emerging market companies, before the acquisitions.
I just need to interrupt you here at this point. So, we often use absorptive capacity because it is such a foundational concept in our field. But would you briefly explain how you understand absorptive capacity and, just like the key idea of the concept?
Right. Yeah, in our own study, the absorptive capacity is really the knowledge base. It's intended as the knowledge base of the company, of emerging market multinational. So, of course, the concept of absorptive capacity can be much more broad. And so it's not only the knowledge knowledge base, but it's also the learning mechanism and is capacity to organize this knowledge, to use this knowledge. But in our, for the sake of measuring it, in our own study is basically the knowledge base of a company, and we measure this knowledge base in terms of number of patents. So the idea is that more patent, it means a better absorptive capacity. It means that this company has already a company with a large patent portfolio will have a good capacity to acquire more knowledge and to adapt this knowledge to utilize this knowledge.
Yeah, and then in your paper, you're using patents to measure that,
yes,
right? Okay, and so what's the key findings?
Yeah, no, yeah, maybe before saying the key findings, I would just say few words about the other determinant we are taking into account, which is the status of a company, because this is very...
Yeah, and this is absolutely important, especially connecting to what you said before,
exactly,
about the different liabilities.
Yeah. Yes. So this idea about the status of a company... which is also probably the most original part of the paper, is that we try basically to measure the perception about these companies through the way in which these companies are represented in international press. So basically what we did was to go into the international press and collect all the news in which the companies, so the emerging market multinational, the Chinese and Indian multinationals, we are included in our sample. So the news about these companies. And then we did a sort of text analysis, identifying a number of words to identify the way in which these companies were represented. So somehow good as a good company, or rather as a bad companies. So using this information through econometric analysis, we identified a variable which is the status of the company. And this status of a company is the hypothesis that we make is that companies with a better status, so company with a good reputation, which are perceived as good company, will be more likely to be accepted by the acquiring company and by the context in which the acquiring company is located. And so for them, it will be easier to access knowledge.
Yeah, so that's basically, it's, you know, from a perspective of a Chinese company, that probably then means investing a lot into marketing, public relations and things like that.
I mean, it could be marketing, public relation, but it's also, reputation can also, is not necessarily related with marketing. Could be, for instance, recognition of a company being very innovative, or a company being very present in some market. So we did some qualitative interviews, and for instance, we were talking with an Indian manager of an Indian multinational located in I think it was in France, and he was telling us that he could really recognize how for them, being very much accepted locally and having a good reputation was crucial in terms of being able to get access to knowledge, because he was able not only to acquire knowledge within the company, the acquired companies, but also being able to be introduced in the local networks, so being able to interact with our local entrepreneurs, with the local universities, and being accepted as a part of the context. So this is something really which can I think make a difference for an emerging market multinational, which of course it means it make a big difference depending on your time strategy. I mean, if the acquisition is a short-term strategy, you will never have a time to build up such a kind of reputation. If you do have a long-term strategy, you can really be there, build up social relationship and build up your recognition within within the local context.
Yeah, no, that makes absolutely sense. I mean, it's quite intuitive, and I think in a way, but maybe only intuitive in retrospect. So, I mean, now I can see there is these two variables, where one is, you know, what is my ability to actually absorb the knowledge if I'm investing into a developed country, acquiring a company from a developed country. And then the other one is obviously the reputation. But then there's also this other variable that you look at is, you know, the where are we as a region in terms of innovation levels, right? So the region where the acquired company is located.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Basically, the idea is the following one. What we test is the following one. We identify two channels through which the emerging market multinational is acquiring knowledge with the acquisition. One channel is the obvious one. So I acquire a company. So this is a way to acquire the knowledge of this company. But the second one is I acquire a company which is located somewhere. And if the company is located in a innovative hub, it means that I can, besides acquiring directly the knowledge of this company, I can take the opportunity to embedding in a specific innovative cluster, in a specific innovative ecosystem. And so we try to understand if these two channels are working. First of all, if it is true that the acquisition is making these emerging market multinational more innovative because they can acquire knowledge through these two channels. And then what we do is to try to see how these two determinants I was just mentioning, these two moderating factors I was just mentioning before, are helping in acquiring the knowledge through these two channels. So if a company with a better absorptive capacity and a better reputation will be more able to acquire knowledge, for instance, in a region, or will be more able to acquire knowledge directly in the company. So this is the idea that.
Yeah, so I think before I was kind of prematurely I asked you about the key findings, but I think now this is okay. The time. So right. So what came out? I mean, now we have all these different factors outlined. Do you see?
So we do find something which at the beginning it was quite challenging for us to explain, because what we do find was that as such the acquisition is not it doesn't seem to be a good idea, because what we find is that if a company is acquiring a very innovative companies, the impact is negative in its capacity of innovation. So basically the acquisition of very innovative companies not increasing, but is decreasing the innovative capacity of the of the company making the acquisition, which is of course a bit challenging to explain it.
So this is, and this is also true for, I mean, now I'm thinking about, let's say there is some kind of very innovative startup or something like that, maybe a little bit bigger, middle-sized company, and this company is getting acquired by, let's say, a large Chinese investor. The acquired company is very innovative, and then on average, you say that the Chinese investing company is not benefiting in terms of knowledge.
What we found was that the more innovative was the acquired companies, the more negative was the impact on the emerging market multinational. But then we tried to understand this result with these moderators. And what we found was that these moderators were very important in the sense that as soon as we considered the absorptive capacities of the acquiring companies and the reputation of the acquiring companies, the result is getting less negative. So what is the implication? The implication is that if a company has a good absorptive capacity, so as an initial good innovation capacity, it will be able to take advantage of acquiring an innovative firm. And the same is for reputation. So if a company has a good reputation, it will be able to take advantage of the acquisition of innovative companies. So basically the idea is that, the conclusion was that in order to make a successful acquisition, as an emerging market multinational, you need to have some initial condition. And in our case, in our study, the two initial conditions, which were both important and which were both enhancing the result, were exactly the initial knowledge base and the reputation.
Basically, do your homework first, invest in a good knowledge base, and then try to acquire to get, companies from other countries.
Yeah, basically, this is what we did find. So, and this is, I think, is important because I think this is what is also interesting in this result is that it points out that something that we were discussing at the very beginning of this talk, not all the Chinese or Indian or emerging market multinational are the same. So it's not an issue. This is something that was told us also by some of the people we interview. It's not really an issue that I am Indian or I am Chinese. The issue is exactly I am a manager of this firm and this firm has this reputation, has this can show an experience in terms of past innovative activity or can show some as a kind of curriculum to show. I think it's very important to notice and to conclude. And for this, I think it's important for EU institution, for government to have more micro evidence because it's not really an issue of I don't want any more Chinese acquisitions or I don't want any more Indian acquisition. It really depends on which one is the firm acquiring? What is the intention of this firm? What they want to do? It's not the problem. Is not that they are Chinese or Indian or I don't know what. The phenomenon is much more complex.
Yeah. So in that case, maybe the recommendation from the EU right now is needs a little bit more micro evidence and a bit more nuance than just let's protect whatever it takes.
And I would say that This micro evidence is not very much available so far. There are very, very few, because also it's not easy to get to collect this information, but there are very few studies about emerging market multinational from the micro point of view. So, for instance, very few studies trying to understand which are the main channels through which knowledge access is really taking place. So is it human capital mobility? Acquisition of patent, is licensing? So all these kind of micro phenomenon should be investigated in much more detail. Of course, it's not easy to do this because these are not data that you can just find available and analyze.
Yeah, obviously, and you need to go in, you need to conduct extensive studies, and this is obviously lots of work, requires trust, requires access to the cases. So yeah, there is a lot of work to do, I guess.
Yeah, but if I can just tell you another little story. Some time ago, I think two years ago.
Oh, little stories are always great, so please.
I think 2 years ago, something like that, I was in a meeting in Brussels, and there was a guy, a German guy, and he previously was working for the Chinese, for the German embassy in Beijing, and he was telling us that some years ago there was this they were receiving these messages from the German government. You should find more Chinese acquirers for our companies, and then just after a while, we don't want our companies to be acquired anymore by Chinese. And then suddenly the indication was we want information, we want indicators, we want instrument to be able to recognize what is a good acquisition, what is a bad acquisition, which of course is not easy to give give numbers to be able to identify good or bad acquisition, but this is probably the right attitude. No, so also at level of the government there was this perception that it was not an issue of having to have more Chinese acquisition to have less Chinese acquisition. The point was what kind of acquisition and who is doing the acquisition, what they are bringing, what they are taking, I would say.
So it really needs analysis on the micro level, as you say, evaluation of the individual case to make a decision about what is good, what is bad. And in the end, probably for each individual case, we will not know until it plays out. Well, Roberta, that's been very fascinating talking to you about this. That's been, it's a very interesting paper, and I will obviously link to it in the show notes. So at this point, I'd like just to thank you again for joining this. And
thank you. It was really nice to talk to you. And I hope, other people will find useful and interesting to listen to us.
Yeah, I hope so too, and I hope maybe after all the whole lockdown situation to see you again at some conference or a workshop soon.
Hopefully.
Okay, well, have a nice afternoon. Bye.
You too. Ciao. Bye.